Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller, sitting in for Angela, and it's good to have you listening to NPR News this morning. This hour, as President Biden's vaccine mandate for large employers faces the gauntlet of the U.S. Supreme Court, and close to 15% of our adult population remains unvaccinated, we're asking this: if the carrot doesn't work, will the stick? What if the people who have decided against a COVID vaccine were to lose privileges, things like boarding airline flights or watching your kid play on an indoor basketball court or being seated in restaurants or movie theaters? We're going to examine what some of the medical science says about the unvaccinated and what the behavioral science says about carrots and sticks. And I'd love to hear from you this morning. Among the people you know who have declined to be vaccinated, would withdrawing some of these so-called privileges persuade them to get it done? I mean, think about this. Is it fair to do that for this vaccine when we don't do it for many others? Or are we at a situation here where the stakes are so high this time that this is really necessary? I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. A lot of people weighing in on Twitter. You can call in 651-227-6000. 800-242-2828. Tweet in at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I, NPR. Again, the idea being here, is it time when persuasion has not seemed to work for some amount of Americans who have declined to be vaccinated, is it time to withdraw some privileges? Boarding airline flights, going indoors to sporting events. Let me know what you think. 651-227-6000. Tweet in at Carrie NPR. Our guests this morning, Stephanie Friedhoff, is a professor of practice and health services at Brown University's School of Public Health. She's part of the leadership team there. Good morning, Stephanie. Welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Scott Ratson is with us. He's Dean of Community Health and Social Services at the Columbia University New York School of Public Health in New York City. Scott, welcome to you. It's really good to have you on the show as well.
Yes. Good morning, Carrie.
Stephanie, I want to acknowledge first here that before we talk about sticks, that there were some pretty shiny carrots dangled in front of people, lotteries, money, lots of praise. And what I'm wondering now is whether those carrots went to people who were going to get vaccinated anyway, and they were kind of destined not to work for people who have so far declined to get the vaccine. Is that one of the things that we can conclude?
Very good question, Carrie. I think that the carrots went to some people that would have gotten vaccinated anyways, but they also put a lot of people over the line that weren't so sure, that were maybe hearing some misinformation and didn't quite know what to do. I think the incentives definitely worked in some places. It is obvious that there's no one-size-fits-all approach and that we, you know, want and need many, many different approaches here to get people over the finish line.
Scott, a question here before we take some calls. Are many of the Americans that make up that, what, somewhere between 13.5% and 15% of Americans who are unvaccinated and eligible for vaccines, are they just unpersuadable? I mean, are we at a situation here with no amount of carrots and no amount of sticks, and we'll talk about that, will really work, and we have to accept that.
Well, Kerry, thank you. We've been studying this for quite some time, and let me say I'm not the dean. I actually edit a journal of health communication at CUNY School of Public Health. We have been developing a whole series of surveys and qualitative research to try to understand not only New Yorkers but Americans on this. And mm-hmm. we do believe, and data does show, that there is a small percentage, not 13%, but a smaller percentage of people that might never get a vaccine. But that still leaves over 90% of the population, one, eligible, and we found many ready to get vaccinated. They just need that extra nudge, or they need to have it as simple as possible, or as that we're talking about today. They need to have an incentive, and the incentive might be the disincentive that I can't go to the sporting event, or I can't get on an airplane, even for a domestic flight. So I do think it's possible, but to answer your question specifically, there's not as high as 13.5% of Americans that are not willing to get a vaccine.
Okay, so just to be clear on this, Scott, there is a group of people, it's somewhere in the 13 to 15% of Americans who are eligible, who at the moment have declined to be vaccinated. You're saying this morning, you can carve off a group of the unvaccinated and say there are reasons, but they are persuadable and there are ways to incentivize them. There is a core, though, in that group that are probably not reachable. Do I have that right?
Well, absolutely. When we looked at this, we were what we called unpacking vaccine hesitancy. And we found in March this year, that was also published in the New England Journal of Medicine, the show, that a good part of people that the media and everybody's been calling vaccine hesitant were not really hesitant at all. They were neutral, or they just hadn't got around to it yet. You know, we're in a much different place now, 9 months later, but there are a good percentage, let's say 5 to 7% of Americans that might never get vaccinated. But there are a large percentage we can certainly motivate and move.
Here's Dr. Sandra on Twitter. I believe vaccination should be required for air travel, sports events, indoor dining, not to deny privileges to unvaccinated, but rather to support good public health policy and practice. So the objective is a public health, not punishing unvaccinated. Let me go to the phones to Daniel in Minneapolis. Daniel, I'm glad you called in. Tell me how you're thinking about this.
Oh yeah. I just had a quick comment. I'd heard it a few times before, but I heard the average hospitalization for COVID was something like $50,000. And just if people think about that from a group insurance perspective, we're all paying for people who are getting hospitalized, primarily who are unvaccinated, and it's like really high cost. So I thought if there's any way that if you're unvaccinated and chose to be unvaccinated, that you could potentially be liable to have to pay a significant portion up to all that cost, that would be a good, I think that's a stick way to make
I think that's a stick
too. Twice about not getting vaccinated.
Yeah. So Stephanie, that's probably at the outer edge of the sticks as I was thinking about them. But I have heard this suggested before, and I wonder how you'd approach that.
Whew. If the question is, do we want to make people pay? No. But I think it's important to understand the impact of those who are not getting vaccinated have on the hospital system. So I just want to follow up quickly on the point you made earlier, Scott, that's really important that vaccine hesitancy is just not a fixed mindset, right? A different way to look at that data is to see that in early 2021, out of all the people who said they would never get vaccinated early last year, by the end of the summer, half of them had gotten vaccinated. So I just want to underscore, we have this idea of the resistors and the unvaccinated, and that's just not a reality. So looking at that a little bit deeper, the question you're asking, Kerry, is really about, we're at a moment of an unprecedented surge in the country, right? The case rates are incredibly high, and the hospitalizations are over 90%. People that haven't gotten vaccinated. What this means is that we no longer can guarantee safe care in the hospital for everybody who comes in, not just for people who come with COVID, but also for others who come with appendicitis or a different condition. That is the moment that we're in, and that's why the question that you're asking about how do we keep everybody safe, and is it time to put in some measures that that prevent people who are not currently vaccinated from accessing entertainment and sort of other pleasures is a really important one.
Stephanie, I just want to follow up on something that I think both you and Scott have alluded to, and that's the language that we use. I haven't this morning specifically used that word vaccine resistant or hesitant. I read an op-ed that you wrote for Stat News last spring in which you took issue with some of the language that the media are using here. And you especially don't like the phrase vaccine hesitant. And you wrote this. First, retire the term vaccine hesitancy. As any crisis communications expert will point out, it's not a good idea to say things you don't want people to be thinking. Repeating the term over and over again unwillingly communicates that there may be something to be hesitant about. Will you just speak to that real quick before we go back to some calls? I think the language is really important here.
I agree with that, and that includes the term the unvaccinated that unfortunately has also been settling in. This essay really struck a nerve and got a lot of feedback from people who wrote, right, and long letters, long emails about just feeling misunderstood and having questions. Hesitancy is a word that scientists use to describe a specific phenomenon, and when experts talk about it, they know what they mean, right? One thing we've seen a lot in this pandemic is that the conversations that experts have amongst each other then sort of filter out into the larger public. And then we have sort of some work to do in order to translate and explain what it actually means. So yes, hesitancy is not a great word. That's why we're using, you know, vaccine confidence. Resistors is a terrible word, right? People are not necessarily resisting. They're considering their decisions and their choices.
Let's hear from some more listeners here. If you've just tuned into the show, Carrie Miller here sitting in for Angela. And we're having a conversation about the idea of carrots and sticks for people who remain, at the moment, unvaccinated. We use some carrots at the beginning. I mentioned, you know, lottery tickets and money and praise, and I think there were some scholarships thrown in there. Is it time, because we've got a percentage of people who at the moment have declined to be vaccinated, is it time to use some of the sticks? And how do we communicate about that and communicate anew about access to vaccines and the importance of getting those vaccines? Scott Ratson is with us, and he is editor-in-chief of the Journal of Health Communication and a professor at Columbia School of Public Health. And Stephanie Friedhoff is with us, a professor of practice and health services at Brown University School of Public Health. 651-227-6000 to weigh in on what you think of this idea of withdrawing privileges from people who at the moment remain unvaccinated, boarding airline flights, going indoors to sporting events and restaurants and other things like that. 800-242-2828. Reach me on Twitter at @CarrieMPR. To the phones to Justin in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Justin, I really appreciate you waiting. How are you thinking about this?
You bet. Well, thanks for having me. I'm taking this solely on my personal experience. And, you know, there's never been anything through my, I'm 41. There's never been anything through my life period that I have seen what you guys are calling the carrot extended, whether it be, you know, trying to get into good schools. And I think the carrots are really what's pushing a lot of us back. And my personal experience has been, I have traveled all over the U.S. in the last year and a half. I have elected not to be vaccinated. I have received, or I have gotten COVID recently. It wasn't as bad as everybody makes it out to be. And I'm not saying that it can be for others. But based on my personal experience, I think you guys are off your rocker if you're going to start pulling privileges from those of us that have contributed to society from day one. We are not bad people by any sense of the imagination.
And Justin, to suggest that, is there anything at this point that would be persuasive for you to get a vaccine, particularly now that you've had COVID, you've experienced this. Is there any kind of, I don't know, access message about, you know, the people around you, the contributing kind of to the common good of good public health? Anything that would be persuasive for you?
At this point in time, you know, I mean, we're
okay.
Everything has been shoved down our throats this last year and a half. And I think that's what all of us are getting sick of, you know, whether you're vaccinated or not, whether you're, you know, I just think that we've come to a point where we've got to get back to life. Otherwise, this, you know, hunkering down is going to drive us all truly, truly insane. And, you know, we've got to go back to work. Our kids here in South Dakota are going back to school. I have a feeling in 10 years, our children are going to be the ones that workers or employers, are looking for, because they have gone through these social experiences as children. They've gone through school as all of us have. And there are a lot of kids out there that I am very, very worried about from the school standpoint. And even just
Justin,
any, you know.
Yeah, let me say this. I appreciate you hanging on to answer my question. Scott, it sounds to me like the answer to my question from Justin is no. I'd be curious about what else you hear and what he said.
Sure. You know, again, Kerry, I mean, thanks for having me and bringing up these important issues. And just, you know, as Stephanie said, we don't like to call people unvaccinated or vaccine resistors. And we do want to build confidence both in our health system and vaccine confidence as well. We need to also signal what is not good for oneself. So, for example, mm-hmm. when you apply for health insurance or life insurance, you have to pay more if you are a smoker. So there already is a disincentive. Many companies also will have, you'll pay more for your premium if you're a smoker, or they'll incentivize you to quit smoking because you're better for yourself and for those in the company and for a variety of other reasons. So I think we do have the ability to do this. We do have precedent with tobacco, which clearly we know kills if used as directed. And just like we know that vaccines, if used as directed, save lives, we need to figure out a similar approach. And I do believe some airlines and some large employers were already thinking about this. Whether or not they're all implemented, maybe it's still out, it's still early, but we need to be more creative to get to the level of herd immunity, or at least protection amongst communities. And the mental health issues that Justin raised, he is driving people insane. Indeed, there are mental health issues. We need to address those as well and not forget about them. But we need to put this all in the right perspective. And getting vaccination is the most simple intervention that we have right now that can save lives. And it is wrong for us as public health leaders, and also those in the media, if we don't try to promulgate that in a positive way.
Scott, let me... I don't want to let this go. I want to get back to callers here, but I don't want to miss something that you've said. You are using the kind of language and the kind of messaging that I've heard a lot of, and it was and is effective for a number of people. But I think we're at a point where we could question whether what you've just said and how you've described this is really going to change things up for people who so far, as I've been saying, have declined to get the vaccine. I mean, do you know what I'm saying here? I don't hear anything kind of new in that is going to in any way challenge people to think about the good of the public health. So what do we do about that?
Well, Kerry, there is no one intervention that's going to solve this. And no one intervention or one size fits all for any of your listeners. So we need to do all of these in tandem and in parallel. So we need to have workplaces when people are coming back or going to a restaurant that they're confident, or even going into a hospital, that they're confident that everyone who is working there is either vaccinated or negative for COVID. Otherwise, we're going to continue to have this virus threaten us and go to what your last caller said, make us insane. We have to figure out ways. And that's why we're also working with the workplace, with employers, because employers, in many cases, are the most trusted source for individuals if they're not getting it from their doctor or a healthcare professional. So how can employers remind people? And we have this group called Business Partners to Convince with the U.S. Council for International Business. creating a whole workplace challenge that people should feel comfortable that they know that people are either masked or socially distanced or tested or vaccinated so they can go back to work in a confident way. So it has to be all different levels of society, and we need to, we're all in this together. And, you know, I think your last listeners and the questions we've heard thus far, we are frustrated that if we use the same old approaches, we're going to never get out of this. So the innovation that we're talking about and the work that's, that Stephanie's mentioned, that we, you know, we don't demonize people, we don't call them unvaccinated or hesitant, is very important. And we need to think in a new way for a vaccine plus or a COVID plus strategy that also deals with health literacy and understanding how vaccines work and understanding why they're important for everyone.
Yeah. Let me go back to some of the comments here. Dan in Cambridge wrote in to say that he's vaccinated. His wife is not. There's confusion between Fauci and some elected leaders, for sure. I mean, the messaging has been definitely confusing on that. And Dan adds, a stick won't work with his wife to get her vaccinated. John called from St. Paul. I'm fully vaccinated and boosted. I respect someone's autonomy, but this is a public health issue. If someone chooses not to get vaccinated and not to mask, if they get sick, they don't get to go to a hospital and take resources from people who have heart attacks and need care. Here's Greg on Twitter. My mom is stubbornly against the COVID vaccine, but if it were a requirement for airplane travel, that would be the stick that convinces her. Back to the phones here to Crystal in Minneapolis. Hi, Crystal. Thanks so much for waiting. What do you want to tell us? Sure.
I spend a lot of time trying to listen to these conversations and read about how to talk to my family members who are not vaccinated. And I just feel like I never really hear the issues addressed that I'm facing when I talk with them, which is, I would say that they're beyond vaccine hesitant. And I understand that desire to not use that word. And there's probably a wide spectrum of people and what their positions are. But mm-hmm. they're very much, they're not just hesitant. They're not just declining. They're actively opposed. I mean, they're trying to convince our other family members not to get vaccinated. And they really believe that it's more risky to get the vaccine. And they're just consuming information that's completely different than I am. And so when we have conversations, mm-hmm. we spend a lot of time where I'm asked to debunk basically a big swath of information that really conspiracy theory type information. I don't really know how to describe it, but I just feel like that's being left out. All the advice I see for how to talk to them doesn't mm-hmm. work. And I believe that also even like a stick approach might further strengthen their perspective that there's some kind of conspiracy behind it. That
yeah, it might be even more alienating. Right. Exactly. I mean, that's kind of the danger. Crystal, this sounds really frustrating. I'm glad you had a chance to call. Stephanie, weigh in. So what do you do when family members are not vaccinated and they've hardened their views and now they're, you know, trying to persuade other members of the family to not get the vaccine? What can she do?
Yeah, thank you, Crystal, for calling in. That is obviously playing out across the country in so many family conversations. I want to unpack for a moment, and we study this in communities across the country. I want to unpack a little bit everything that's in here, which is that, as Scott was mentioning earlier, vaccines used to be just another public health measure, right? We have vaccine mandates in schools, like that has all existed. And because of the pandemic and the way it has gone, vaccines have become so politicized that individuals, and we can talk for a moment then about all the misinformation and how information is being used and weaponized to change people's thoughts or confuse them about the vaccine. But part of why, Crystal, those conversations aren't, you know, easy or successful is because the vaccine has now become attached to all kinds of other things, right? It's become about identity. It's become about politics. It has become about who you are. It's no longer, okay, yeah, it's a thing we all do sort of for each other. So we have to get back to a place where we can have a culture of safety around vaccines. So you alone, right, everybody in their families can't fix that problem. That's part of this. the conversation we're having today is really about individual choice versus what we need to do as a public to keep everybody safe. And one thing that we see that works really is, Crystal, is that you keep having the conversation, right? This is about listening. The debunking is so hard and the arguments are so twisted. So I think we all hear and feel that. But it's also okay that there isn't an immediate resolution, and to understand that all the conversations are bringing health literacy, regardless of what the immediate decision about the vaccination is.
Okay. So, Stephanie, I think that's important that we don't miss what you just said. Even if you're in a conversation where you feel like you're tumbling down this rabbit hole of conspiracies, you are, do I hear you saying, still contributing to some kind of health literacy if you are adding facts to that discussion, even if you don't think they're being accepted?
Yeah, so you are a family member, right? So in that sense, there is a connection already. And I think one key, I'm sure, Crystal, that you know already from these conversations and everybody, is that this is not about being the nerd at the dinner party, right? And rattling down all the facts. That doesn't motivate anyone to do anything, right? It is about asking questions, as you did, Carrie, earlier with Justin, who I really want to thank Justin for calling in, because, you know, he's representing a lot of people who have similar thoughts and feelings about the vaccine. So asking questions, understanding what would motivate you, better understanding the thinking and the mental framework is what gets you to those sort of conspiracy theories and this and that and so forth. That's harder to debunk. But yes, it is definitely working in the long run to help build, or at least right for the things not to go unanswered and unexplained.
Okay. This is a conversation, if you've just gotten in with us, on I guess what I'm calling carrots and sticks. Are there some people who have not yet been vaccinated who are persuadable to get the vaccine? What will that take? I mean, is it time? I'm asking listeners to weigh in. Is it time to withdraw some privileges, to add a stick to the incentive to get the vaccine? Or is that even more alienating and you're only going to turn away people that might be persuadable? 651-227-6000 to call in on that and to get on Twitter. And I know I'm missing a lot of the tweets here. I will try to catch up on that. It's at Carrie, KerriMPR. We're going to get a look at the latest news. When we come back, I want to talk to Scott Ratson about a paper that he wrote on where primary care physicians, trusted members of the community, should fit into this to persuade the so far unvaccinated. And I want to talk about fear, how fear tends to be a motivator in some of these cases. How do we dismantle some of that fear? So we'll talk about that on the other side of news with Stephanie Friedhoff and Scott Ratson and your calls and questions. To Phil Picardi now with the latest. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Carrie. Welcome back.
30 million families are now doing without a monthly child tax credit check. That check helped pay for groceries, rent, and the high cost of raising a kid. It also helped lift millions out of poverty. Our listener-led series continues with a look at our attitudes toward and the political priorities around government programs designed to help those in need. Next time on 1A.
That's 1A with Jen White, next to 10 a.m. here on NPR News. Then at noon, listen to Minnesota Now, hosted by Kathy Werzer. Right now on the podcast for the program, you can listen to the conversation that Angela had yesterday about how the pandemic has affected the college experience. That shift back and forth between in-person classes and virtual classes, the canceled activities, the social isolation. You can listen to the podcast. You can also catch my Friday book show at noon, and you can hear authors like Marlon James and Ann Patchett. A lot of good listening at nprnews.org.
Wellness Wednesday's programming is supported by UCare. New to Medicare? You can talk with a Medicare decomplicator for help finding a plan that fits your needs. Learn more at ucare.org/Medicare.
Programming is supported by Great River Energy, providing reliable electric service to 28 Minnesota member co-ops with a diverse mix of power generation, including power plants and renewable energy. Great River Energy, powering what's possible.
I'm Carrie Miller, and we're back to our conversation this morning. And I want to go right back to the phones here to Brian in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Brian, I appreciate you wading through news there, and I'm curious about what you have to say to this.
Everybody's been right so far. It is going to take a combination of measures.
Brian, I'm so sorry. I know you got on the air and there's some interference in your call. I'd love to have you call back because I think you're going to talk about a combination of carrots and sticks. Let me go to Bob, listening in Minneapolis. Hi, Bob. Thank you for waiting. What are you thinking about?
Hi. Well, there's a couple issues that haven't really been addressed that I think should be brought to light. One is the definition of fully vaccinated. It's very misleading because the definition of fully vaccinated is two shots in a 14-day window of time that has to have elapsed. Mm-hmm. So based on that criteria alone, we have hospitals that are filled with technically vaccinated people. Okay, so that's a huge deal because that right there sheds a whole different light on everything. Another thing that is actually...
Bob, I'm going to check... Hold on, Bob. I'm going to check your facts on we have hospitals full of technically vaccinated people. Yes, but we want to make sure we've got experts here, and I want to make sure that we can check that. Can you hold your second point for just a minute while I go back to Scott? Scott, does he have that right?
Bob is right that we don't have the definition of fully vaccinated updated, and we've been calling for that. We need to update it where it includes a booster. So fully vaccinated are three shots at this point for adults, actually all the way down to adolescents now. And that hasn't been done. I mean, the CDC you mentioned earlier has been, and listeners have mentioned, if to say the least, not doing a great job on communicating both guidance as well as what's expected. And this is one of those issues that should be fixed straight away.
I have to say, I was under the impression, Scott, and correct this if it's not true, that many of the people who have been hospitalized are people who might have had one dose or no dose at all. Is that the case? Or is Bob correct that they've had two doses, but they haven't been boosted, and so we're not calling them vaccinated?
No. I think what I was separating it out, that we don't have the definition of fully vaccinated correct yet, and it hasn't been corrected. So there is some different counting at different levels in hospitals and throughout the country. Just we don't have as great data collection. I'm sure Stephanie would speak about this as well, that we could have in this country, and it's really a shame. So not having the fully vaccinated definition, and even being able to measure if people have one, two, or three doses, that's also part of the confusion that Bob is mentioning. But yes, there are a number of people that are vaccinated, but not fully vaccinated, that are in the hospital. But for the main fact is the majority of people that are hospitalized today in America with COVID, going in for COVID as their presenting illness, are unvaccinated. And that vast majority of those that are unvaccinated are still the ones that are more susceptible to not making it out of the hospital, if I can say
okay.
that.
Bob, thank you for letting me clarify some of that. Now, what is your second point?
My second point is the other thing that no one ever talks about, which is horrifying, is natural immunity. And you can go to AccuLabs, you can go to AccuPoint Labs in Edina, for example, and you can check your antigens and see where you're at a year out. I've done it. I know 15 people that have done it. They have very strong antibodies coming a year out into this. And they've been resistant to getting COVID. Now, Omicron has taken the entire universe by storm. And yeah, everyone's getting that. I'm talking about natural immunity being addressed. It's very insulting.
Okay.
And it's very beneficial to large corporations like pharma to be raking all this money when we're not talking about natural immunity.
You've come to the right place. Let's talk about natural immunity. Stephanie, what should we understand about that? Bob doesn't think he's heard enough information on it. What should we know?
Yeah, thank you, Bob, for the question. It's such an important question. Natural immunity is really immunity. Vaccines also give you natural immunity. Natural immunity is your body's ability to fend off a virus once it shows up in your system. So there's many ways to get to that immunity. One is you get infected and build antibodies. Another way is to get vaccinated. If you get COVID without the vaccine, your probability to get severe disease or die is a lot higher than if you get COVID whilst you have been vaccinated. In either of these cases, we're building immunity. And the way to think about this is that over time, yes, a lot of people are getting Omicron right now. Others have gotten Delta before. All of these give our body the tools to fend off future variants. So nobody should feel ashamed if they're getting COVID right now. That is obviously happening to millions of people every day. It's a much better way to get your immunity by vaccination and by frequent vaccination. And just on the other point, it's also really important. Vaccines need to be up to date. We made a mistake again. We talked about language earlier. We made a mistake in saying fully vaccinated because we are at this point, right? We're still learning what does it take to be fully vaccinated, to have lifelong protection. We don't know that it's a novel disease. So is it a 2-dose regimen or a 3-dose or a 4-dose regimen? That's what we're learning. And at this point, what we're talking about is, are your vaccines up to date based on the current knowledge?
Let me go back to the phones here to Ed in Brainerd. Hi, Ed, you own a small business, is that right?
I do, yes. A small office, law office, and since vaccinations came out, you have to have a vaccination card to come in here, which is certainly unusual for rural Minnesota, and we can certainly serve our clientele remotely. You don't need to do in person, but that's worked quite well. I require everyone in here, working here, to be vaccinated. That's worked well, and certainly run into plenty of people around here who are not vaccinated, and I think some of them are set in their ways or tied in whatever whack-a-mole conspiracy theory they may subscribe to, but others can be swayed. I heard of one person, actually a local government official, who got vaccinated so he could go to Canada because Canada requires vaccines to go. So I think there are people that are persuadable, but as far as restricting access, it's not just as a carrot or a stick. Those of us who live in the real world, frankly, and who got vaccinated, don't want to be around those who don't because they're dangerous. They spread the disease. That's all there is to it. And we shouldn't have to be around them. We shouldn't. Two callers you got in this morning repeat some of the same, COVID's not a big deal. I got it. Wasn't that bad. And natural immunity will take care of it. It's the same garbage we've been hearing all over from some of these people, and we shouldn't humor it, and we shouldn't have to be around them. Thank you.
Yeah, Ed, I'm really glad for the call. You echo some of the things that I'm seeing on Twitter, including from Mindy, who says it's beyond time for there to be punitive measures for the willfully unvaccinated. I have a feeling Scott and Stephanie won't like that phrase. Other countries have had them for months. They vaxxed and boosted, have sacrificed a lot in the past 2 years, while others have gone about life as usual. The imbalance is grossly unfair. Stephanie, back to you on this idea that for public health to work, people have to sacrifice. They may have to go along with some things that they don't like. We do that with other vaccines. How to activate, I guess, that perception within people who have so far, been unpersuadable when it comes to vaccine? How do you activate this common good perception?
Well, I think this is where leadership plays a role, including from our political and community leaders. I want to emphasize again that we have different choices in different moments. We didn't start the vaccination rollout with a mandate. The mandates came later once it became obvious that a too large number of people at that time wasn't getting vaccinated for us to reach a point where we have enough protection at a population level. For individuals, I agree with what is coming out of this really important conversation and what our callers are contributing, which is some people will be turned off by the stick. However, we currently need the stick in order to manage the loads in hospitals. That is always mm-hmm. our weakest point and weakest measure. So we need the sticks right now in order to get to a place where not in 2 weeks, and Omicron is going to continue to make case numbers go up. We want to be very clear. We're 2 weeks away from a peak of this surge, and hospitalizations lag by a week. So everybody can do the math. Once we get past this point, there's a lot of cleanup work to do. And I wish that our leaders would understand their role in helping people instead of emotionalizing people around this issue of vaccines and just understand sort of the importance for all of us. But I don't have a good answer because, again, like we talked about earlier with identity and how it is now connected to so many other things, there's no easy way to say, oh, yeah, come, please just get vaccinated and let's go.
Call here from Eric in Mora. Hi, Eric. So glad you called in. Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, I've got a couple of points. Like one of your callers, I have very reticent family members. And one of the things that comes to mind for me, and I haven't heard this very often, but you talk about who are the people in your life that are going to influence you. In my family, that would come from the church. And I heard the phrase common good. One of the things that doesn't seem to be coming out from church leaders that I know of, in fact, I know of cases where it's actively the opposite of that, is that, look, we're doing this. Our Christian beliefs are often based on common good. And so where are the church leaders in this? Why aren't they stepping up? So that's point one. Point two, when we talk about a stick, that one right there wouldn't be a stick. That would be a carrot to me. Now, when we talk about the stick, it comes to mind that it's almost impossible if the stick comes from the government. I don't care if it's state, local, federal. What's going to happen is that's going to end up in the courts, and it's going to drag out for weeks or months. What this really needs to come from is the businesses. If Delta Airlines made mm-hmm. the point that you're not getting on our plane unless you have, and now we're talking about a well-defined, you have two and a booster. Mm-hmm. You have two and a booster, you show me your card, you can get in. We're flying to Hawaii in March.
Eric?
You don't, oh, okay.
Yeah, understood. Okay, I appreciate the 2 points. I don't want to miss the first thing you said, and want to bring this back to Scott, which is, he's talking about, for his family, trusted members of the community, and that would be leaders in churches and religious institutions. And Scott, I think this is a good question for you because I read your paper on how important primary care physicians could be in getting people who have declined to be vaccinated. And I want to share this with listeners here. You wrote, primary care clinicians and trusted healthcare organizations often have the working relationships with community leaders to create solutions that fit local needs and preferences. So is the challenge here, I think, as Eric brings up, that we haven't really activated these trusted community leaders, these primary care physicians, these members of clergy, or haven't they seen themselves as essential to this?
Well, thanks, Carrie. It is a complex question, and I think Eric did raise certainly important areas. We know that faith-based leaders are very important of who people trust. But together with physicians or other healthcare providers, they could make a huge difference. And we did try, if I could say we, I mean, I know certainly the Biden administration brought faith-based leaders together, even the Pope has been saying things the last couple of days. There's interest at all different levels, but translating that to the community level, I think, has been the issue at hand, and that hasn't happened in an effective way. And I think you're right, Carrie, by saying that.
Can I ask you why, though, Scott?
Well, it's hard to know the why in all of these, and we are, and it's also unfair to lump everyone together, whether they're in, amongst religions and communities. But what it is fair to say is that, physicians in many cases didn't think this was their role. They also didn't have the vaccines in their clinics or available to give. So there was a lot of complexity if they gave advice to get vaccinated, then somebody would have to book an appointment, oftentimes didn't have transportation. the vaccine clinics at churches and other religious places. People said they liked it, but that they didn't want to go to somebody else's place of worship, or they didn't want to go to a stadium. So a lot of these stopgap measures, if I can call them that, or what seemed logical and common sense to our leaders, didn't translate into good vaccination practice. And I think what Stephanie has mentioned, we do need bold leadership. And that includes leadership at these physician organizations, not only on the national level, but whether it's the Minnesota Medical Association or down to the community chapters, they need to have a more active role. So I think that's kind of the why, that physicians don't only have the role in their practice, they also have the role in their community. And we need to figure out ways to also incentivize them in an overtaxed world right now with COVID. So it's too complex to do alone.
I know. I can hear the primary care physicians yelling at the radios right now saying, we're doing it all. And now you're saying we're not doing enough. We're not saying that, but we're saying they're trusted members of the community and they might be extremely valuable. Stephanie, you want to weigh in on that real quick?
Oh, I do. Thank you. Agree with everything Scott just said. A couple more really important points. Primary care physicians have on average 10 to 15 minutes in a visit. It is incredibly hard to have this type of complicated conversation. Primary healthcare providers really are asking for both more time and better guidance on how to have these conversations. So there's an educational component here. On the leadership model, I think that on the community level, a lot is actually being tried. In the communities that we work in, for example, the FACE community will say, in these two zip codes where we have really low vaccination rates, we need to create videos in 5 or 6 or 7 different languages because that's how many languages are being spoken. We have completely underestimated throughout this entire vaccination rollout what it means to generate vaccine demand and what the investment needs to be here. So we are the organizations with perspectives and approaches
Stephanie,
here.
Forgive me for interrupting here. We're getting a little interference on your line. We'll see if we can kind of stabilize that while I go to another call. To Al in Bloomington. Good morning, Al. Good to have you on the line.
Good morning, Carrie. You're one of my favorite people on public radio, by the way.
Well, thank you. Good to have you call.
So what I'm calling about, I'm a baby boomer, retired. I know a number of people in my age group that are not interested in getting a vaccine, and my observation is just about all but one of them that I know, they are nonconformists in other areas of their life. So I'm not surprised that they're nonconformist in this issue, and they think they're just going to be like the flu, and that's going to be it. But I think what they don't consider is some people become long haulers, like my wife, who got it last spring, a week after her vaccination, and she still suffers from fatigue.
Oh. Wow. Yeah, as in, are they considering all of the implications of their actions? I've heard Scott and Stephanie say today that it's so complex, you can't approach this like a black and white. You're making a choice. Do you realize all the implications of that choice? Scott, I have about a minute left for a thought on that, if you would.
Sure. I mean, I think you're absolutely right, Carrie, to try to suggest to Al and others, I'm a baby boomer as well. We are at risk. And you should be able to tell the story about your wife's scenario and the long-haul COVID, which is real. The second thing also, Eric just mentioned businesses. I like to come back to businesses are so important. Mm-hmm. And, Business Partners to Convince has even a website. There's Health Action Alliance. There's lots of different pieces that are going on to give business the tools. And that's where I also think we can reach out together and get businesses with, as people mentioned, clergy, with physicians, and make a difference here. But we're not going to do this alone. I do think we need carrots and sticks. The other caller mentioned that somebody decided to get vaccinated when they needed a flight to Canada. That's great. Mm-hmm. If somebody needs to fly domestically, I think we should also have the same kind of level that will be necessary. That will also be both a carrot and a stick. So we need to put all these things together and, hopefully stem COVID at some point. But I think as Stephanie mentioned, the next 2-3 weeks are going to be very difficult. And I want to thank you again, Carrie, for having me on your show and looking forward
Scott.
To
Moving really good to have you both on with the nuance of the conversation. Scott Ratson with us from Columbia University, New York School of Public Health in New York City, and Stephanie Friedhoff with us from Brown University School of Public Health Leadership Team. Stephanie, Scott, thank you both very much. If you're on Twitter, I didn't get to your comment. There were kind of an avalanche of comments here, but you can keep the conversation going if you like, and you can tweet in at Kerri, K-E-R-R-I, MPR. Thanks for all the calls and tweets.
Support comes from Delta Dental of Minnesota Foundation, making dental care possible for Minnesotans in need by funding nonprofit dental clinics, expanded dental workforce, and school-based programs to improve oral health. DeltaDentalMN.org/NPR.